The Pardoner's Tale. Here begins The Pardoner's Tale.
In Flanders, once was a company of young people who indulged in dissipation, such as riot, gambling, brothels, and taverns, where with harps, lutes, and gitterns, they danced and gambled both day and night. They also ate and drank more than their capacity, through which they performed the devil's sacrifice within that devil's temple in cursed fashion, with odious excess. Their oaths being so great and so worthy of damnation, that it is horrible to hear them swear. Our blessed Lord's body they tear to pieces. They thought that the Jews tore him not enough, and each of them laughed at each other's sins. And immediately comes female acrobats, elegant and slender, and young female fruit sellers, singers with harps, pimps, wafer sellers, which have been the real devil's servants, to kindle and blow the fire of lechery that is connected with gluttony. That holy rite I take to my witness, that lechery is in wine and in drunkenness. Recall how that drunken lot unnaturally laid with his two daughters, unknowingly. He was so drunk. He did not know what he did. Herod, who examined the stories, when his wine was filled at his feast, right at his own table he gave his command to slay John the Baptist, completely innocent. Seneca says a good word, doubtlessly. He says he can find no difference between a man who is out of his mind and a man that is a drunkard, but that madness occurring in a villain lasts longer than does drunkenness. O gluttony, full of wickedness, the first cause of our ruin, the cause of our damnation, till Christ had to buy us with his blood again. Indeed, how noble, shortly to say, bought was the same cursed wickedness. All of this world was corrupt with gluttony. Adam, our father, and also his wife, from the Garden of Eden, to labor and to grieve, were driven by that vice, there is no doubt. For while Adam fasted, as I read, he was in the Garden of Eden, and when he ate the forbidden fruit on the tree, immediately he was outcast to grieve and complain. Of gluttony, we ought to be sorry for. If a man knew how many maladies follow because of excess and of gluttons, he would have more moderation in his diet, sitting at his table. Alas, the short stretch of the gullet, the tender mouth, and the east and west and north and south. In earth and air and water, men labor away to get a glutton delicious food and drink. Of this matter, Paul wisely says,
food for the stomach, and also stomach for the food, shall God destroy both.
As Paul says, alas, a foul thing is it, by my faith, to say this word, and fouler is the deed when men drink of the white and red, that he makes his throat into a privy through the same cursed excess. The weeping apostle says very compassionately,
there walks many of whom you have told me, I see it now, weeping with sorrowful voice, that they are enemies of Christ's cross, of which the end is death. Stomach is their God.
O stomach, O belly, O stinking bag, filled with dung and corruption, at either end of thee foul is the sound. How great is the labor and the cost to provide for thee. These cooks, how they pound and strain and grind, and turn the inner reality into the outward appearance, to fulfill all the gluttonous desires. Out of the hard bones knocks the marrow, for they cast nothing away that may go through the gullet soft and sweetly. Spices of leaf and bark and root shall be his sauces for your delight, to make him a new appetite. But certainly he that indulges in such pleasures is dead, while he lives in those vices. A lecherous thing is wine, and drunkenness is full of strife and wretchedness. O drunk man, disfigured in your face, sour in your breath, foul art you two embrace. And through your drunk nose comes a sound as though you continually said,
Samson, Samson.
And yet, God knows, Samson never drank wine. You fall as if you were a stuck pig. Your tongue is lost in all your desire for decency. For drunkenness is truly the grave of man's wit and his discretion. In whom drink has power, he can keep no secret, there's no doubt. Now keep yourself from the white and from the red, and namely from the white wine from Leap, that is for sale in Fish Street or in Cheap. The wine of Spain creeps insidiously into other wines growing nearby, of which there arises such vapor that when a man drinks three drinks and thinks that he is at home in Cheap, he is in Spain, right at the town of Leap, not at Rochelle, not at Bordeaux town, and then he will say,
Samson, Samson.
But listen, sirs, one word I pray to you, that all the outstanding acts, dare I say, of victories in the Old Testament through the true God that is omnipotent, were done in abstinence and in prayer. Look at the Bible, and there you may learn it. Look, Attila the Great Conqueror died in his sleep, with shame and dishonor, bleeding at his nose in drunkenness. A captain should live in soberness. And beyond all of this, advise yourself right well. What was commanded unto Lamwell, not Samwell, but Lamwell, I said. Read the Bible, and find it explicitly, about giving wine to them that have the jurisdiction. No more of this, for it may well suffice. And now that I have spoken of gluttony, now will forbid gambling. Gambling is a true mother of lies, and of deceit and cursed perjuries, blasphemy of Christ, manslaughter, and also waste of property and of time. Furthermore, it is a disgrace and dishonor to be regarded as a common gambler, and ever the higher he is of estate, the more he is socially shunned. If a prince practice gambling in all governance and administration, he is, as by common opinion, considered less in reputation. Stilbon, who was a wise ambassador, was sent to Corinth in great honor from Sparta to make an alliance. And when he came, it befell him by chance that all the greatest of the land gambled, for he had found, for which as soon as it might be, he stole off home again to his country and said,
"There I will not lose my name, nor will I take on so great of a dishonor to ally with gamblers. Send other wise ambassadors. For, by my truth, I would prefer to die than to ally with gamblers. For you who has been so glorious with honors, shall you not ally with gamblers, as by my will, nor as by my negotiation?"
This wise philosopher said this: "Look also to the king Demetrius, the king of Parthia, as the book tells us, sent him a pair of golden dice in scorn, for he had gambled previously, for which he held his glory, honor, or his renown, at no value or reputation. Lords may find other manner of amusement, seemingly enough to drive the day away." Now I will speak of oaths, false and great, a word or two as old books treat them. Great swearing is a detestable thing, and false swearing is even more reprehensible. The high God forbids swearing completely. Witness on Matthew, but especially on swearing, says the holy Jeremiah,
"You shall swear the truth in your oath and not lie, and take an oath in court, and also in righteousness."
But idle swearing is a wickedness. Behold and see that in the first tablet of high God's honorable commandments, how the second commandment of his is this:
"Take not my name in vain or wrong."
Behold, earlier in the list, he forbids such swearing rather than homicide, or many a cursed thing. I say that as for order, thus it stands, those who know his commandments understand how the second commandment of God is that. Besides, I will tell you all bluntly that vengeance will not part from this house that of his oaths is too unrestrained.
By God's precious heart, and by his nails, and by the blood of Christ that is in Hale's Abbey, 7 is my number thrown at dice, and yours is 5 and 3. By God's arms, if you falsely play, this dagger through your heart shall go.
This fruit comes of the 2 cursed dice: perjury, anger, falseness, homicide. Now for the love of Christ who died for us, leave off your oaths, both great and small. But, sirs, now will I proceed to tell my tale. These 3 rioters of which I tell, long before 9 a.m. was rung of any bell, were seated in a tavern to drink. And as they sat, they heard a bell ring before a corpse was carried to his grave. One of them called to his servant.
"Go quickly,"
he said,
"and ask promptly what corpse is this that passes past this place, and see that you report his name well."
"Sir,"
said the boy,
"it is not necessary. It was told to me before you came 2 hours ago. He was, by God, an old friend of yours, and suddenly he was slain tonight, blind drunk, as he sat on his bench upright. There came a sly thief called Death, from whom in this country all the people die, and with his spear he struck his heart in two, and went his way without any more words. He has slain 1,000 with this pestilence. And, master, before you come in his presence, I think it would be necessary to be wary of such an adversary. Be ready to meet him always. My mother taught me. I say no more."
"By St. Mary,"
said this tavern keeper.
The child speaks truth, for he has slain this year, over a mile from here, within a great village, both man and woman, child, farm laborer, and peasant. I think his dwelling place is there. To take care, great wisdom it would be, before he does a man a dishonor.
Yes, by God's arms,
the rider said.
Is it such peril to meet with him? I shall seek him everywhere. I make a vow to God's noble bones. Listen, friends, we three are of one mind. Let each of us hold up his hand to each other, and each of us become each other's brother, and we will slay his false traitor Death. He shall be slain, he that has slain so many, by God's dignity, before it be night.
Together have these three pledged their word, to live and die each of them for the other, as though he were his own born brother. And up they leaped, all drunken in this rage, and forth they go towards that village, of which the tavern keeper had spoken before. And many a dreadful oath they have sworn, and Christ's blessed body they tore in pieces. Death shall be dead if they lay a hold of him. When they have gone not fully half a mile, right as they would have staggered over a stile, an old poor man met with them. This old man very meekly greeted them and said thus,
Now, lords, may God protect you.
The proudest of these three riders answered again,
What, knave, bad luck to you. Why are you all wrapped up except your face? Why do you live so long in such old age?
This old man began to look at his visage and said this,
For I cannot find a man, though I walked here from India, neither in the city nor in a village, that would change his youth for my age, and therefore I must keep my age still, as long of a time as it is God's will. Not even death, alas, will take my life. Thus I walk like a restless wretch, and on the ground, which is my mother's gate, I knock with my staff, both early and late, and say, Dear mother, let me in. How I waste away flesh and blood and skin. Alas, when shall my bones be at rest? Mother, with you I would exchange my chest that has been in my chamber a long time for a hair cloth to wrap me in. But yet to me she would not do that grace, for very pale and withered is my face. But, sirs, to you it is no courtesy to speak to an old man discourteously, unless he has done wrong in word or else in deed. In the Bible you may yourselves be well read. In the presence of an old man, white hair upon his head, you should arise. Wherefore I advise you to read. Do not do unto an old man no harm now, no more than what men should do to you in old age, if you last so long. And God be with you wherever you go or ride. I must go where I have to go.
No, old churl, by God, it shall not be so,
said this other gambler immediately.
You cannot depart so easily, by St. John. You spoke right now of this same traitor Death, that in this country have slain all of our friends. Have here my pledge, as you are his spy. Tell where he is, or shall pay for it, by God and by the Holy Sacrament. For truthfully you are in league with him to slay us young folk, you false thief.
Now, sirs,
he said,
if it is so desirable to you find Death, turn up this crooked way, for in that grove I left him, by my faith, under a tree, and there he will abide. Not for your boast he would not at all hide. You see that oak tree? Right there you shall find him. God save you, that redeemed mankind, and amend you.
Thus said this old man. And each of these riders ran until they came to that tree. And there they found a florins of fine gold, new minted, round, very nearly 8 bushels, as they thought. No longer than after death they saw it, but each of them so glad were they of that sight. For the florins were so fair and bright, and down they sat by this precious hoard. The worst of them spoke the first word.
Brethren,
he said,
pay attention to what I say. My understanding is great, though I joke and play. This treasure has fortune given to us, in happiness and pleasure to live our lives. And easily as it comes, so will we spend. God's precious dignity, who would have thought today we should have so fair a piece of good luck? But if this gold be carried from this place home to my house, or else unto yours, for well we know that all this gold is ours, then we would be in happiness. But truly, by day, it may not be done. Men would say that we were out-and-out thieves, and for our own treasure would have us hanged. This treasure must be carried by night, as cunningly and as slyly as it might be. Whereas such I advise that the straws be drawn among us all, and let us see where the short straw will fall. And he that has the short straw, with happy heart, shall run to the town, quickly, and bring us bread and wine very secretly. And two of us shall keep cunningly this treasure well, and if he will not delay, when it is night, we will carry this treasure by common agreement, wherever seems best to us.
One of them brought the cut of the straws in his fist, and bade them to draw, and look where it will fall. And it fell of the youngest of them all, and forth toward the town he went immediately. And also as soon as he was gone, one of them spoke this to the other.
You know well that you are my sworn brother, the prophet I will tell you immediately. You know well that our friend is gone, and here is gold, that is a great amount, that shall be divided among us three. But nevertheless, if I can bring it about so that it would be divided among us two, have I not done you a good turn?
The other answered,
I do not know how that may be. He knows well that the gold is with us two. What shall we do? What shall we say to him?
Shall it be a secret?
Said the first villain.
And I shall tell in a few words what we shall do, and bring it well about.
I grant,
said the other,
without a doubt, that by my truth I will not betray you.
Now,
said the first,
you know well we are two, and two of us is stronger than one. Look, for when he is seated, then immediately arise as though you would when you play with him, and I shall stab him through the sides twice, while you struggle with him as in a game, and with your dagger you shall do the same. And then shall all this gold be divided, my dearest friend, between me and you. Then may we both fulfill our desires and gamble at our own will.
And thus these two villains agreed to slay the third, as you have heard me say. This youngster, who went to the town, often turns over in his heart the beauty of these new and bright florins.
O Lord,
he said,
if it be that I might have all this treasure to myself, there is no man that lives under the throne of God that lives so happily as I.
And at last the devil, our enemy, put in him a thought that he should buy poison, with which he might slay his two friends, because the devil found him in such a condition that he had the ability to bring him into sorrow. For this was wholly his full intention, to slay them both and never to repent. And forth he goes, no longer would he delay, into the town, into a pharmacy, and asked him if he would sell him some poison, that he might kill his rats with. And also there was a polecat in his yard, that, as he said, has killed his chickens, and gladly he would take vengeance, if he might, on vermin that were ruining him by night. The apothecary answered,
and you shall have a thing that, as God save my soul, in all this world there is no creature that eats or drinks of this concoction, not but the quantity of a grain of wheat, that he shall immediately lose his life, die he shall. And that, in short, while you would not go but a mile at a walking pace, because the poison is so strong and violent.
This wicked man has taken in his hand this poison in a box, and afterwards he ran into the next street unto a man, and borrowed from him three large bottles, and in the two he poured his poison. The third he kept clean for his drink, for all the night he planned to work at carrying the gold out of that place. And when this rider, with a sorry grace, had filled with wine his three great bottles, he returned to his friends again. What need is to preach of it more? For right as they planned his death before, right so they had him slain. And that at once, and when this was done, one of them spoke.
Now let us sit and drink, and make us merry, and afterward we will bury his body.
And with that word it happened to him by chance, to take the bottle where the poison was, and drink, and gave his friend a drink also, for which immediately they both died. But certainly, I suppose that Avicenna never wrote in any set of rules, or no chapter, more wondrous signs of poisoning than these two wretches at their ending. Thus ended these two murderers, and also the false poisoner. O cursed sin of all wickedness! O traitorous homicide, O wickedness, O gluttony, lechery, and gambling, blasphemer of Christ with shame, and others great oaths from habit and from pride. Alas, mankind, how may it befall to the Creator, who created us and with his precious heart's blood redeemed thee. You are so false and unnatural, alas. Now, good men, God forgives you of your wrongdoings, and guard yourselves against the sin of greed. My holy pardon may save you all, provided that you offer gold coins or silver pennies, or else silver brooches, spoons, rings. Bow your head under this holy edict. Come up, you wives, offer some of your wool. Your names I enter here in my roll immediately. Into the bliss of heaven you shall go. I absolve you by my high power, you who will offer, as innocent and also as pure as you were born. And this, sirs, is what I preach. And Jesus Christ, that is our soul healer, so grant you to receive his pardon. For that is best, I will not deceive you. But, sirs, a word I forgot in my tale. I have relics and pardons in my bag as fine as any man in England, which were given to me by the Pope's hand. If any of you will, of devotion, offer and have my absolution, come forth at once and kneel down here and meekly receive my pardon, or else take a pardon as you go, all new and fresh at every mile's end, so that you offer, again and again, gold coins or pennies, which are good and true. It is an honor to each one that is here that you may have a competent pardoner to absolve you in the country as you ride, in case of accidents that may occur. Perhaps there may fall down one or two off their horse and break his neck in two. Look, what a safeguard it is to you all that I have fallen into your company, who may absolve you, both more or less, when your soul passes through your body. I advise that our host shall begin, for he is most steeped in sin. Come forth, sir host, and offer first at once, and you shall kiss the relics, every one, for a groat. Unbuckle at once your purse.
No, no,
he said.
Then may I have Christ's curse. Leave it be.
He said.
It shall not be so, as I prosper. You would make me kiss these old breeches and swear it were a relic of a saint, though it were with the ass stained. But by the cross which St. Helen found, I would have your balls in my hand instead of relics or of a reliquary. Have them cut off. I will help you carry them. They shall be enshrined in a pig's turd.
This pardoner answered not a word, so angry he was. No word would he say.
Now,
said our host,
I will no longer joke with you, nor with any other angry man.
But right at once the worthy knight began, when he saw that all the people laughed.
No more of this, for it is right enough. Sir Pardoner, be glad and in a cheerful mood. And you, Sir Host, who have been so dear to me, I pray that you kiss the Pardoner. And Pardoner, I pray to you, come near, and as we do, let us laugh and play.
At once they kissed and rode forth their way.